Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This Independence Day, wrap yourself in comfort and freedom with Minky Couture. From stars, stripes, and snuggles to cozy classics, our luxury blankets are proudly made to comfort. Whether you're watching fireworks or hosting backyard barbecues, be proud to be cozy all summer long. Celebrate comfort. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate you. Shop now at MinkyCouture.com and make your 4th of July unforgettably cozy.
Chrono in our YouTube chat says, robocallers, every time I try to watch Redacted, tell those robocallers to F off.
Yeah.
Put your phone in do not disturb mode. It's time for Redacted. Welcome in, everyone. Yeah, you're busy. You're watching Redacted. Hey, everyone. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Wake up, America. On this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, or we have to sift through all of the piles of propaganda that they spin on a daily basis. Today, we're going to talk, the mainstream media, of course, totally ignoring what's been happening in Russia over the past 48 hours. The big BRICS summit. Vladimir Putin speaking just a short time ago this morning, answering reporters' questions. He talked about Donald Trump. He talked about the U.S. election. And he talked about World War III in the Middle East. We are on the brink of a massive disaster, he says. We're going to talk about that. And Colonel Douglas McGregor is going to join us just here in a little bit to talk about how close Israel is to attacking Iran and what that means for the United States.
Plus, two states suing the Department of Homeland Security and ICE saying that they are going to release illegals with, one, a deadly strain of tuberculosis, which is antibiotic resistance.
Oh, fun.
That's great. And two, criminals. They intend to just let them free in your neighborhood. You don't get a say in this. Apparently, it's charities that are arranging this with the government. You have to just live in these communities and pay taxes and support this. It's wild. If your AG is on the ballot, it's time to pay attention because they're the only ones really pushing back about this.
And what happens when you defund the police across the United States? You know, the liberal policies that defunded the police and shut down police departments across the United States. Well, it turns out crime surged and actually destroyed communities. And we're going to talk with the director of a brand new documentary today, the creative mind behind the brand new documentary called Their Lives Mattered. It's kind of taken the internet by storm right now.
Yes.
So we're excited to speak with him a little bit later in the show. Good to see all of you guys. Plus, we'll get to your super chats and your Rumble rants here on this Thursday. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. We are live every day, Monday through Thursday, at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So good to see all of you guys today.
Indeed. Are you feeling it? Are you feeling the electric energy of the election? Yeah. I am. I feel like something. I need to clear my schedule and just be on Twitter for the remainder of it. But I'm here. I'm working. We got to do it, right? So we got to talk, have productive conversations, because we are still part of a republic, a representative republic. So let's do it, shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, Russian President Putin warns that the Middle East is on the brink of disaster and World War III seems imminent. Speaking to reporters this morning at the BRICS summit in Russia, Putin talked about how Israel's war against Gaza and Lebanon and Iran must stop before it spirals out of control.
Hostilities that started a year ago in Gaza Strip now spilled over to Lebanon. Other countries of the region were also affected. The confrontation between Israel and Iran is also growing. It looks like a chain reaction, and it puts the entire Middle East on the brink of a disaster, and the humanitarian situation is also exacerbated. The displaced persons and refugees is more than 1 million people. The infrastructure and residential areas, hospitals, schools, social infrastructure were largely damaged.
He also said that an independent Palestinian state must be established and must peacefully coexist with Israel. Now, Putin was also asked about the relationships with a future Trump administration and developing good relationships. He said Russia is open to this, but the U.S. has to make the first move, both by voting him in and then Trump actually making the contact.
As to how Russia-U.S. elections, Russia-U.S. ties are going to develop going forward after the elections, this is an open question. We are open to, if the United States is open to building good relations with Russia, we will reciprocate. But this, the choice is up to the new American administration.
All right. Well, Trump's name came up again, responding to Democrats' fake news about Russia and Trump somehow colluding, even though that was disproven in previous elections. They have tried to warm that tea back up. Here's how President Putin called this nonsense.
As for your allegations about Donald Trump, this is something that we've heard for years, that we've been blamed, and Trump himself has been blamed about some kind of connections, having some kind of connections with Russia. Then they've had investigations, including investigations in the United States, including in the Congress, and everyone now agrees that this is complete nonsense. There has never been any kind of ties or connections between myself and Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No connections whatsoever. See if you're going to see that. But by the way, that coverage of BRICS on your on any of the mainstream media,
right.
You're not going to see it. I mean, but I think it was pretty telling to hear President Putin say it's the Middle East is on the brink of disaster. I mean, because they will support Iran. They're not going to allow Iran to be wiped off the face of the earth.
Clearly not.
Right. And China, I mean, also involved in this in a big, big way. And you have all of these Arab countries right now pouring money into you know, Egyptian banks and other places like that. So. This is imminent right now.
Well, you know, a lot of politicians or analysts say that the Middle East considers themselves Western Asia. It's not a separate region. So this would be a war with a coalition of Asian countries with only Israel by themselves and the United States somehow reaching from across the pond to support. That's not possible. It's not possible to win a war like that. So don't let them sell you this war. One, because it's immoral. And two, because it would lead to millions of nonsensical deaths.
Exactly. Well, even Democrats are calling Kamala Harris's town hall last night a word salad disaster. Those aren't my words. Those are Democrats' words. It was really painful to watch if you watched it. Obama's chief strategist, David Axelrod, said that Harris's meandering, lengthy answers to questions didn't address anything. Even on the key topics like immigration and Israel, like this disastrous response to Trump's border wall question, she basically, Anderson Cooper's like, you mocked Trump for wanting a border wall, but now you're planning to build a wall yourself. You called it stupid. Is it still stupid? How do you explain your flip-flopping on this position? Watch.
Is a border wall stupid?
Well, let's talk about Donald Trump and that border wall. So remember, Donald Trump said Mexico would pay for it? Come on, they didn't. How much of that wall did he build? I think the last number I saw is about 2%. And then when it came time for him to do a photo op, you know where he did it? In the part of the wall that President Obama built.
But you're agreeing to a bill that would earmark $650 million to continue building that wall.
I pledge that I am going to bring forward that bipartisan bill to further strengthen and secure our border. Yes, I am. But, and I'm going to work across the aisle to pass a comprehensive bill that deals with a broken immigration system. I think Jackson's question, part of it was to acknowledge that America has always had migration, but there needs to be a legal process for it. People have to earn it. And that's the point that I think is the most important point that can be made, which is we need a president who is grounded in common sense and practical outcomes. Like, let's just fix this thing. Let's just fix it. Why is there any ideological perspective on this? Let's just fix the problem.
You're doing this compromise bill. It does call for $650 million that was earmarked under Trump to actually still go to build the wall.
I'm not afraid of good ideas where they occur.
So you don't think it's stupid anymore?
I think what he did and how he did it did not make much sense because he actually didn't do much of anything. I just talked about that wall, right? We just talked about it. He didn't actually do much of anything.
But you do want to build some wall.
I want to strengthen our border.
Oh, right. Now she does. Yeah. The borders are the most disastrous border policy in American history. She wants to now fix the... I mean, do you hear this? This is
Let's
an absolute madness.
Why haven't you? Well, let's do it now.
Let's do it now. Let's do it right now. I haven't done it yet. I haven't gotten to it yet because I've been so busy with other things.
Yeah.
As Linda says, she lies so easily. Right. It's very easy for her. So to Anderson Cooper's credit, actually, last night, he repeatedly pressed Harris to answer questions. She kept dodging the answers. He didn't let her get away with any of it. Here it was one of my favorite exchanges when Cooper asked her if she's ever made any mistakes during her life or her last 4 years as vice president. Here's how she responded.
Is there something you can point to in your life, political life or in your life in the last 4 years, that you think is a mistake that you have learned from?
I mean, I've made many mistakes. And they range from, you know, if you've ever parented a child, you know you make lots of mistakes, too. In my role as vice president, I mean, I've probably worked very hard at making sure that I am well-versed on issues, and I think that is very important. It's a mistake not to be well-versed on an issue and feel compelled to answer a question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Like, what are your weaknesses? You know, you're applying for this job. What are your weaknesses? You know what? I just care too much. Mm-hmm. I spend too much time researching.
Yeah.
The topics.
Rely too much on amazing people.
And if I didn't care too much, that would be a weakness.
Right.
Right.
I mean, let's go around the horn here. Like, what if you were being interviewed for a job, like, what would you say? Like, I would say, well, you know what? I get hangry. So I get hangry and I become a passive aggressive asshole.
He does.
I can't stand it. Sometimes I'm disorganized.
Yeah.
A little disorganized sometimes.
If you try and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, Clayton will yell at you for waking him up.
Yeah, I get pissed. Like, don't wake me up in the middle of the night. That's a weakness
like that.
Of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's a laundry list of things that I'm not good at.
Sure.
Yeah.
When I was applying for my first job at Wet Seal in the New Park Mall, I wrote down, there was a question just like that. Said, what are some of your personal weaknesses? And I wrote down that I sometimes get moody because I was 15 and 15-year-old girls are moody. And my mom was like, you can't write that. And I was like, why? It's true. Why can't I do that?
And it's good to know nothing's changed. All right. Let's move on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Do you want to talk about even CNN anchors thought that she did not drive home the point and convince any undecided viewers?
This was funny. Watch.
Well, I'll just tell you what I'm hearing from people who I have been talking to. And that is that if her goal was to close the deal, they're not sure she did that. And, you know, some people have asked, is she being held to a different standard? Maybe. But that's maybe the world that she's living in. And on the question of who she is, people are understanding that a little bit more. But what she will do, the question about her legislative priorities, name one. There wasn't one. You know, some more of her personality and her sort of character questions about your weaknesses or what mistakes did you make? Not necessarily the answers there.
All right.
Yeah. Well, you really closed the deal. And like I said, David Axelrod called it a word salad. I mean, this is an Obama strategist who said this was a word salad city, he said.
Yeah.
So Democrats across the board thought this was pretty much a disaster last night.
All right. Well, a new book by Bob Woodward shows that President Biden's mental decline was well known for at least a year before he dropped out of the race. We've been saying that for longer than that because we watch what he does and says. But according to Woodward, now President Biden reportedly struggles to complete sentences, couldn't stay focused during public appearances. Witnesses say it's like talking to a, quote, senile grandfather. At various fundraisers in 2023, Biden couldn't answer simple sentences, couldn't recall basic facts or even words. Woodward explains how he used pre-written note cards, but still wanders off topic often and repeats old stories that he just told. Most damning of all, though, Woodward explains how top Biden aides knew this and continued to lie to the American people, quite frankly, telling us that everything was fine, like this one when Karine Jean-Pierre, White House spokesperson, said all of these videos about Biden looking frail and incapacitated, those are just deep fakes.
It tells you everything that we need to know about how desperate Republicans are here. Instead of talking about the president's performance in office, and what I mean by that is his legislative wins, what he's been able to do for the American people across the country, we're seeing these deep fakes, these manipulated videos, and it is, again, done in bad faith.
Yeah, so it's all fake. It's all fake videos.
Well, it wasn't until the disastrous June 27th debate when they could no longer deny it. We saw that happening. So, and
well,
remember,
they tried to
it was a conspiracy theory that they told us for the first half of 2024 that Biden would not be on the ballot. They said that's a Republican conspiracy theory. Here we are.
You know,
another one to check off the list. Conspiracy theory came true.
I want to just say, and not to pat ourselves in the back, but I will, because occasionally I'll see a troll in the comments say, when has Redacted made any predictions that come true? Quite often, actually. Ukraine war, Israel, and the list is actually pretty endless. But last year, I specifically said that he would not be the Democratic nominee for president of the United States. He would not be on the ticket. And people are like, you're a conspiracy theorist. And sure enough, he's not the Democratic candidate for president of the United States, because it was well known within those circles that he was cognitively impaired. Mm-hmm. And even as Tucker Carlson pointed out, his own family knew this going back years, even before he ran for president of the United States, that this was well established. So the fact that their team was lying to us repeatedly, I mean, to me, it's treasonous. Right. Yeah. I mean, this is absolutely treasonous. You're keeping this from the American people and then you're covering it up. Well, Bob Woodward, his new book lays this all to bear. Well, Kamala Harris's open border policy has cost America $150 billion, and it's taking money from police, fire, and other local resources. Take a look at the front page in the New York Post today called Land of the Free Lunch. U.S. spent $150 billion on migrants last year. It's taking money from everything else. Migrant crisis cost $150 billion in 2023, with crisis zones having to cut police, having to cut fire services to cover cost of illegal immigrants. Housing, food, et cetera, all for them. So taking money away from services that you need for your community and instead giving it to feed illegal immigrants and house them. This is an outrage. So to put this in perspective and how this affects cities across the United States, Denver, Colorado, city council there has to cut $45 million from its budget, including $8.4 million from its police department, $2.5 million from its fire department, and $90 million just to cover the price tag for illegal immigrants. New York City spent $2.3 billion in housing migrants in the city. South Portland, Maine, also had to increase property taxes just to pay for the migrant crisis there. And the mayor has advised, this is unbelievable, the mayor in Portland, Maine, South Portland, Maine, has advised elderly residents to remortgage their houses to pay for them. Really? And Chicago faces a $1 billion budget gap right now, partly over migrant services, which are now they're scrambling to make up. So the New York Post reports that this is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to migrant spending, as the state and local expenditure is far higher.
Now, research from a pro-immigration group called the American Immigration Council estimated that a one-time mass deportation would cost at least $315 billion. Now, they present that to you saying, see, we can't afford it, we shouldn't do it. But if this is the real number, which we know it's a deflated number, that would pay for itself in just 2 years, right? So
right.
Do we keep paying $150 billion per year in taxpayer dollars, or do we shell out one time and then fix our immigration system? What do you want to do? Well, I guess that's on the ballot.
Yeah.
Well, now to a major story that could upend the transgender movement. A doctor who studied puberty blockers found that it does not, in fact, improve patients' mental health, which we've been telling you for a long time because the data has already shown that. But she's refusing to publish her study because she worries that her work will be weaponized by critics of transgender medication. She told the New York Times that she actually thinks puberty blockers didn't make these kids better because most likely the children were already doing well when the study began. Well, that doesn't make sense. Why would she have included them in the study, trying to prove that their mental health improved, if their mental health was already hunky-dory? That doesn't make sense, but we don't get to see her research methods because she doesn't want us to see it. Most likely her work is in line with what most research already shows, is that puberty blockers do not make people feel better. Gender transition does not improve mental health. In fact, gender transition increases risk of suicide. It does not mitigate that, despite the fact they like to pretend otherwise. And really, this person should never get another grant again, because if we're going to give give her assignments. She was paid $10 million by taxpayer grants to conduct this study since 2015, but won't release it even though we paid for it because she doesn't like what it says. So how can you ever trust her again with a research grant? You can say, here's some money, go to some science. We paid for it. We want to see what happens. And then we have no guarantee that we ever see the data. Because a scientist doesn't like it. Even her fellow researchers on the paper say this is extremely unethical because it could have implications. Somebody could say, oh, this puberty blocker, it's going to make my kids sterile. It's going to stop their brain from maturing. It's going to keep their genitals in a permanent state of prepubescence. Okay, maybe I'm not going to do that if it's not going to make them feel better mentally, which is what this shows. So damn this lady. And that's what I have to say about that.
Well, Tucker Carlson says Trump is going to win in a landslide. A very big event last night in Georgia. Tucker, along with RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, and Donald Trump, delivered, honestly, one of the best speeches that I've ever seen Tucker give. And I've seen a lot of Tucker's speeches over the years. Speaking to a massive fired up crowd in Georgia there, Carlson explained, a second Donald Trump presidential election victory would be the end of the GOP nominee's redemption arc, almost like this is a sort of a, you know, a redemption arc story. After he's been attacked, defamed, indicted, I mean, shot in the face, arrested, and all of that. Listen to this.
And so on election day, and I sincerely believe Donald Trump's going to win. And if I thought he was going to lose, I'd be here anyway, by the way. I would. In fact, I would have been here earlier if I thought he was going to lose, just to make the point. I mean it. I don't like people who jump on the winning train, okay? I think Donald Trump's going to win. And not only do I think Donald Trump's going to win, I think that the vibe shift has been so profound. I mean, the numbers suggest he's going to win. He's ahead in all seven battleground states. But much more important, and the early voting seems to be favoring him. But more important even than the conventional political markers is what you smell around you. And it's the return of freedom. It's the return of the country you grew up in, where you could say things like, I like that guy, and maybe you like the other person. That's fine. That was not allowed for 9 years. And it's allowed now. And I think, and it's because of what they did, by the way, they deserve this. But I think the vibe is so strong right now, I don't think we can get away with pretending something else happened. I don't think we can have another 2020 at this point. I just don't. I don't. Where they hid relevant facts from you, they prevented you from knowing about their candidate, and then claimed victory. 37 billion votes or whatever they claim he got. That's rigging the election, period. If the government prevents people from knowing critical information about a candidate, they have rigged the election. And they did that, period. Oh, you're not allowed to say that. I'm not allowed to say it because it's 100% true. And every person who hears it knows it's true, including the people who did it. I don't think they can do that again. I don't. And I don't think, no matter what they pull 2 weeks from now, 13 days from now, I don't think they can get away with standing up and being like on MSNBC, no, actually, Kamala Harris is a historically popular, it turns out. Woman who's never had a job who can't even pronounce her own first name consistently. That's how false she is. Some woman who grew up in Montreal, Canada is lecturing me about America. Okay. I don't think they can do that because I don't think people are going to sit back and take it. I don't. It's enough. It's enough.
It's enough. Carlson also destroyed the mainstream media and Democrats who have pushed this false narrative that Americans who like Trump are somehow weirdos and marginalized misfits, when the reality is the ruling class, as he pointed out, is filled with actual freaks and misfits. You're actually seeing it now, right? Talk about Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein and all of those people that are trying to protect their weird sort of pedophilia in Washington, D.C. and everything else. Those are the weirdos.
Everyone in Hollywood?
Yeah, those are the misfits.
Yeah.
I mean, had Kevin Sorbo, actor Kevin Sorbo, he's like, the reason I wasn't kicked out of Hollywood. I left because they're all pedophiles.
Yeah.
Right? These are all the people supporting Kamala Harris, by the way. Mm-hmm. Holding fundraisers for her. and all of that. He says it's a cult. Tucker said, quote, none of the normal people are supporting the Democratic machine. It's the party of weirdos, of envy, of hate, of redemption, of bitterness, of weakness, of total lack of creativity. It's a party of conformity. It's a party of the machine where it doesn't matter who the candidate is because individuals are immaterial. He says, all that matters is the collective. That's the Soviet model. And he finished the speech with this, saying, we're sick and tired and we're not buying your bullshit anymore. I love this. Watch.
That's the point at which you say, no, I'm sorry. I put up with this crap for a long time. I indulge your little fantasy. It's like when your teenage girl becomes a vegetarian, and you're like, okay, that's, you know, well, okay, it's fine. No, I totally understand. You're like, it's a phase. But if that phase goes on for 9 years and includes destroying your major cities and allowing your country to be invaded by millions of foreigners whose identities you don't know and whose purpose in this country is unclear, by the way, why shouldn't we feel threatened by that? If they go out of their way to crush families, to make it impossible for your kids to buy a house, and getting involved in the sex lives of your children, which they are, if they do all of that, they need to lose. And at the end of all of it, when they tell you they've won, no. You can look them straight in the face and say, I'm sorry, Dad's home, and he's pissed. Thank you.
Oh, I love that.
Longtime viewer Lisa Pettit in our show, in our chat, says, I wish I was that positive about the outcome of the election. It does feel like we're all on tenterhooks, but I like the positivity,
yeah.
The idea that the Democrats go back to the drawing board, realize they're all perverts, and don't come back until you've paid penance. I don't want to hear from you.
And Daddy's home.
Yeah.
We're case closed. We're done.
You're grounded, Democrats, for being perverts.
Exactly. All right. We've got more news to get to here. Colonel Douglas McGregor is going to join us in just moments. We're going to talk about the disaster unfolding right now in the Middle East. Is this war about to happen before the election? Yes. In fact, he believes that that's the case. We're going to talk to him about how he sees this unfolding. And, really on the back of what President Putin just said this morning, that President Putin, of course, saying that the Middle East is about to explode into World War III. So I'm going to ask him, is this hyperbolic? Sometimes I'll see some people in the chat saying, no, that's fear-mongering talking about World War III. It's like, is it? I mean, all signs point to this is a major disaster unfolding right now. So we'll talk to him about that. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Indeed, because we're all driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring in your small business or large business, the best way to search for a candidate is not to search at all, but instead match. Because with Indeed, if you need to hire, they can match you with the perfect candidates instead of searching through a black hole of resumes. And in fact, you can ditch the busy work. Indeed can be used for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect faster with candidates. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employees agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. So Indeed is a great place, especially in this economy where obviously we're all focused on jobs. We want jobs to make their lives better, your life better, because you get help in your company, and their lives better because they have gainful employment. So join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Now, listeners of this show will get $75 in a sponsored job credit to make their jobs more visible if they go to Indeed.com/redacted. Again, Indeed.com/redacted. Go there right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. One more time, it's Indeed.com/redacted. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, are we on the verge of World War III, or is that hyperbole? Let's ask Colonel Douglas McGregor, who's been tracking and watching what has been unfolding in the Middle East, of course, in the wake of this leaked documents scandal. And is Israel about to attack Iran? What does it mean for the 57,000 American soldiers who are in the Middle East right now, and all of this happening right before Election Day? Colonel, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you as well.
So when I say, we're on the precipice of World War III, I mean, are we being hyperbolic here, or are we already there? And what do you think that this means ahead of the election?
Well, we're not there, but I don't think you're being hyperbolic. we have to consider the following points. If you look at the current state of affairs on the ground in the Middle East, the Israelis are following the Greater Israel Plan, which has been on the shelf for many, many years. This Greater Israel Plan incorporates at least half of Lebanon, part of Syria, part of Jordan, and of course is denuded completely of Palestinian Arabs. So that's underway. And I think, though it has not been formally announced, that both London and Washington understand this and are supporting it. Now, what does this mean? This means that at this point in time, the Israelis have done about as much as they can do in Lebanon and Gaza. Now, they can continue to bomb and destroy infrastructure. And people are upset over hospitals and schools and other things being destroyed. This is part of the plan. It's to destroy all of the infrastructure, making it impossible for anybody to live there, forcing the millions that live in these places to leave, to go somewhere else, or die one way or the other. And this is what we in London are strongly supporting. However, the Israelis are not winning, per se, on the battlefield. In other words, they're taking losses in southern Lebanon that are quite heavy. They continue to take losses down in Gaza whenever they go in on the ground. They realize that they cannot continue on this path without some sort of dramatic victory elsewhere. And the elsewhere, frankly, is Iran. They've got to attack Iran. Netanyahu knows that. He has no choice. The question is one of timing. And this is what people need to understand. It is in his interest, Netanyahu's and Israel's interest, to start this war with Iran before the election. Now, they currently have done everything in their power. That is Mr. Netanyahu and his agents in the United States pouring vast sums of money into the Trump campaign to ensure that Trump is elected, because Trump has made it abundantly clear that he will support unconditionally whatever the Israelis want to do, that he backs them. But they can't be entirely sure that once he's elected, he will follow through completely as they would like. At the same time, they have no guarantee and no certainty whatsoever that Kamala Harris will do anything that they want her to do. In fact,
so that's why you start it now? That's why you start this war right now?
What?
So that's why they start this war right now?
Yeah, it's got to happen this weekend or next weekend, sometime before the election, get it underway. Then whoever ultimately wins, even though they are banking heavily on President Trump, they know that they've inherited a war that they just can't walk away from. Now, how does the war, from their standpoint, really get off the ground? They've got to launch crippling strikes against Iran. They're going to do as much damage as they can. Whether or not they'll attack the nuclear facility is open to question. The probability of their attacking the oil facility, I think, is very high. Again, that's another lucrative target. There are many other things to hit, but those are the two most significant from the Israeli standpoint. If they do either or both, the Iranians will respond ultimately with all that they've got, and they've got quite a bit. And as we've already seen, the air missile defenses don't really work all that well. Any of these could be overwhelmed. These two THAAD batteries, terminal high altitude air defense or area defense missiles and radars are not going to measurably change much, because you are inevitably firing two missiles, sometimes even three, to hit incoming missiles. So you can exhaust whatever is in your magazine quickly. The Iranians, on the other hand, I'm being told, have the capacity to fire 400 missiles and rockets an hour for days.
Wow.
So you're talking about a very different set of circumstances with Iran. But that's fine with Mr. Netanyahu, because as soon as Israel comes under attack, the plan is for the U.S. air power and missile power to attack Iran. Now, we've got nearly 1,000 fighter jets that are loaded, ready for bear. They'll go in and attack. We've got large numbers of standoff munitions that can be launched from aircraft far away from air defenses, because obviously there is a certain amount of a respect for the S-400 and what it could potentially do. But we're going to see whether or not Iran can defend itself effectively when the air defenses are tested by the Israelis. And it'll be very interesting to see, because we just don't know. We've never done it. Now, once this war begins and you get the U.S. naval air and missile forces engaged, and the U.S. Air Force with the bombers that are down on Diego Garcia, all of this will be thrown at Iran. what will Russia do? And Russia has made it pretty clear that they are not going to allow Iran to be destroyed. And now, as recently as within the last 24 hours, Putin made an offer to Netanyahu with no expectation, obviously, that it would be accepted, but an offer to effectively sit down, negotiate, and try to sort this problem out. Netanyahu and Israel have no incentive to sort anything out. From now on, it's their way or the highway. There is no interim. There is no room for a discussion of a solution that does not involve the wholesale removal of all the Arabs from Israel. And as I said, we seem to have signed on for the Greater Israel Project, we and the British. In other words, we're happy to change the order completely in the Middle East. Now, Russia has no incentive to go along with that. By the way, the Turks have no incentive to go along with that. Iran has no incentive to go along with that, neither do the various Arab regimes. The Arab states are weak. They're not strongly led. But right now we are seeing a lot of evidence that, for instance, the Saudis are putting a lot of money into Egyptian banks. We're going to see a lot of that happen with Qatar and the other Arab Emirates putting money in Jordanian banks. This is to stiffen the spine of those countries and remind them that they're Muslims and that they need to get on board with the larger war that's beginning. And I think that's where it's headed right now, a very major war. And the issue for us, frankly, is how long could we fight in support of Israel without Israel being destroyed in the interim, regardless of what we do? And I don't think we've got the missile power, the arsenals, the munitions, to stand up and fight for more than a week or two.
That's deeply troubling. I mean, Americans should let that sink in, what you're saying here, is that basically the United States government is supporting the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, the destruction of Gaza in order to expand the size and scope of land package for Israel, expanding into other areas, not just Gaza, of course. But then we have 57,000 troops sitting there. Many of these bases can really only handle small arms fire, drone attacks. But right. When you get Iranian missiles, ballistic missiles targeting these American bases, if we throw ourselves into this, these 57,000 Americans and maybe more thousands over the coming days will be joining this. They're all sitting ducks. I mean, it's what we've been saying here on the show, and Americans need to wake up and pay attention to what's happening here. Again, am I being hyperbolic?
No, absolutely not. And they will undoubtedly take casualties. And of course, that's music to Mr. Netanyahu's ears. The more Americans who are injured or killed, the more likely he's convinced that the United States and the population will cast its lot with Israel 100%. Now, I'm not sure he's right. I think there are a lot of Americans that have serious misgivings about widening this war. There are many Americans that don't think the war should be going on at this point and are wondering why nothing is being done. The other aspect that nobody bothers to point out that will get a lot of attention when it happens, and that is you've got a financial crisis waiting to explode onto the world scene. There's right. A lot of information right now suggesting that Bank of America may go under. Stop and think about that. That's an enormous institution, and it has lots of unrealized losses, and we just don't know, but it looks bad. And how much can we do to prop that up? And what does that mean for other financial institutions? So this is in the background. Once this begins, this could effectively unravel the so-called world order that we keep insisting has to be maintained at all costs. So whoever becomes president, and at this point it probably doesn't matter once this war gets off the ground by Mr. Netanyahu, whoever inherits this mess is going to have to make some decisions, because the longer they wait to make hard decisions, the worse this will get. And that means, how long do we participate in this fiasco? And we'll have lots of people say, well, we can't stop. I remember everybody saying during the Vietnam period from 68 onward, well, we can't just leave. And of course, that's exactly what we did. And the question this time around will be, after a couple of weeks, how can we go on? You know, look what's happening in our country. Our country is not exactly the picture of social cohesion right now. And this, of course, presupposes that the majority of Americans regard whatever happens on 5 November as legitimate. I mean, obviously, the expectation, and I think under normal circumstances, President Trump would win. Will he win, though? I don't know. But let's assume he does. Now he said he's going to back the Israelis to the hilt. How long does he do this before the financial system takes a bite out of his administration? I mean, this is a very dangerous time. I don't think we can be hyperbolic right now if we're Americans looking at this from our standpoint.
Yeah, I see some comments occasionally, you know, in our show. It's like, oh, this fear about World War III. It's just fear-mongering. I mean, look at what's happening. And we should be fearful right now. Yes, maybe we should all be fear-mongering because you see what's about to happen right now? It's a disaster waiting to happen for the United States.
Well, remember something else, and I think you and I have talked about this before. We have a small number of people inside the Beltway that have hijacked the government. When I say a small number of people, what are we talking about? 50 to 100 political figures with huge billionaire backing who've been making the decisions and driving policy. You know, we're not in control. We've not been consulted. Right. And the people inside the Beltway don't care. And the other problem is most Americans are sitting there, even though you are raising the alarm and others. I mean, I listen to this too. And Americans sit there and say, well, you know, war is something that happens on someone else's soil. It's not a problem for us. It's going to be a hell of a problem for us. And remember that we're no longer clubbing baby seals. When someone asks me, what do you think war is like in Iraq or Afghanistan? It's clubbing baby seals. What's the baby SEAL going to do? The baby SEAL has no air defense. The baby SEAL has no army, no air force, nothing. So sure, you can club baby SEALs. Well, you're no longer clubbing baby SEALs. Iran is a major power. No, it has not invested in huge armies for the purpose of conquering anything because it doesn't do that, doesn't want to do that. But it's invested heavily in this missile arsenal. And we know they're in the threshold stage regarding, you know, nuclear warheads. Burns, the CIA director, has said they have not built a nuclear war yet. I think he's probably right. But what's the incentive to do nothing now? What happens if the Israelis decide to use a tactical nuclear weapon against the so-called Iranian nuclear facility, which has to be penetrated, has to go through hundreds of feet of ground to get to it? Well, then that proverbial genie is out of the bottle. If the Israelis use a nuclear weapon, her opponents are going to show up with nuclear weapons, and that would be catastrophic.
Yeah, we should all wake up and pay attention. Colonel, great to see you. I want to encourage our audience to go over to your website, which is Our Country, Our Choice. Learn about Operation Focus, taking our country back, stopping these maddening wars, and focusing on the United States of America. Colonel, great to see you. Thank you for your insights on this.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Colonel. Appreciate it. So I'm glad to be vindicated because I say World War III alert. I mean, you're not going to hear it on CNN or Fox News or anybody else is warning us about what's about to happen. They're pro. They want this to happen because mm-hmm. it's huge ratings for them. We're trying to prevent this from happening and trying to make sure people are prepared. So, I mean, it's terrifying right now. And of course, at the heart of all of it, you might be, I don't care where you come down on this. There's 57,000 Americans sitting there as sitting ducks right now,
yeah,
who will be attacked if this unfolds. I hope that if President Trump he pulls back on this immediately and demands a ceasefire. And go ahead, like, Philip.
Just think about that, like the fact that their troops are there. Like, you know that Iran is going to do everything they can to not attack those American positions because they don't want that to happen,
right?
But then you know that they're just going to happen to get attacked. And that's the one of the catalysts. That's the false flag that we're so good at is just one of our bases will suddenly get bombed. And Iran's going to be like, why the hell would we do that? But we're going to be like, nope, you did it. We're in it.
Well, and Iran has said, you know, if the United States does attack us, we will respond. And there's plenty of targets throughout the Middle East that are American backed that will be destroyed. Mm-hmm. This is a disaster waiting to happen. All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Thursday.
We're going to talk about these states having illegal immigrants with incurable diseases and also criminal records, and how your attorney general had better sue ICE or else they're going to be released into your country, into your state.
I hope more of this happens. I mean, I hope we have more of these lawsuits, like these communities that are being overrun because of the failure of Mayorkas and Department of Homeland Security.
Wait till you see, like, what they found out in these lawsuits. Now, it just because the AG in Tennessee was vindicated and actually prevented the release of migrants into his community doesn't mean those migrants went back. Doesn't mean they went poof. They're still inside the United States. They're just right now not in Tennessee. So it's worth paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll get to that in a second. But first, I know we talk a lot about precious metals on this show. And again, gold hitting an all-time high this week. Of course, we've been talking about what's going to happen to the U.S. dollar with the rise of the BRICS currencies backed by gold. The dirty little secret right now that all these banks don't want you to know about is that, of course, gold is the only safe haven right now. Bank of America just admitted it this week. Gold is like the only safe haven right now. That's why Natalie and I are big investors in gold. We just made a big purchase of gold and silver. We bought about 60% silver, 40% gold, because silver's relatively cheap right now, comparatively speaking. But nevertheless, if gold's going to hit $3,200 an ounce, according to UBS, that's what the analyst target has it hitting over the next couple of months. So it's important for you to think about your family's future, and investing in gold and silver is one way to do this. And our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up with this. Call them. Just get on the phone and talk to them. They have an 800 number. They're an American company. You're not going to get outsourced to some place in Pakistan or India or something. An American will answer the phone. And they have a team dedicated to our redacted audience. So just get on the phone and talk to them. And 1-800-613-3557. Ask for the free gold report. Like, maybe you're not interested yet in investing in gold and putting part of your U.S. dollars into precious metals. That's fine. Get their free gold report, which they have available. You can read all about these price targets for where gold is headed and do your own research on it. Spend the time with your family discussing it. We are big advocates of investing in real assets around here, gold, silver, real estate, tangible, real things, not U.S. dollars, which are debt and are backed by nothing. So anyway, give them a call, talk to them today, or go to their website. LearRedacted.com is another place you can go, or just get on the phone and call them, 1-800-613-3557.
Well, the Louisiana Attorney General is suing the Department of Homeland Security and its leader, Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, because she says that an illegal entry into the United States by a Chinese national who has a rare, aggressive, and drug-resistant form of tuberculosis, which carries high mortality rates, was let into the country, and ICE doesn't want to do anything about it. And in fact, she says, this is AG Liz Merle, says that this person has come into contact with hundreds of detainees, other illegal migrants, and other non-detainees, and has put the health and safety of Louisiana and the American people at risk. Now, what she wants is for ICE to not release the people who have been in contact with this individual until they are first checked out by a doctor and cleared, and ICE won't do it. That's why she's suing, not just to prove a point, but to make an effort to contain what she says is an aggressive, rare, and drug-resistant form of tuberculosis with high mortality rates. Raise your hand if you're totally cool with someone with that walking around your community because of an open border. Here's the lawsuit in case you want to read it. And I've also linked you to it in the newsletter today, or you can just search up this case number if you want to pause or do a screenshot. Now, notice that other named defendants in this case include ICE, the CDC, the National Center for HIV, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and TB Prevention. So none of those organizations are helping. They're not that concerned, really. So concerned about COVID, but this TB, which she says is highly fatal, antibiotic resistant, they're not helping. So here's the timeline of what she says happened on finding this patient. She says October 9th, they learned that this person had a rare and drug-resistant form of TB. October 15th, the AG has a call with ICE and demands that ICE not release anyone else who was exposed to this patient without first having a medical clearing from the Department of Health. ICE refused. Why? What's the, because they just need to shove more people in there? What's the purpose of saying, no, we gotta let them go? We just, why? October 16th, they file a suit for a restraining order to stop them from doing that. October 17th, the court gives them that restraining order, and SIT sets a hearing for today. It was supposed to be, but now that's been delayed till October 31st. So presumably that patient is still in custody, and so are 200 other detainees. And if they weren't sick before, they have a higher chance of getting sick now because they'll get more of a viral load unless that person is contained. We don't know. And as for this person being Chinese, well, it doesn't really matter what nationality he is, if he's a carrier of a biological disease that could spread. But it is worth asking, because Clayton's been saying this for months, why are Chinese people coming across the southern border? How'd they get there?
Military age men, by the way, with no families.
Yes, we're actually going to see. It's adult single men is mostly the problem. But here is what AG put forward on Twitter. Why is no one asking this? Why and how are Chinese nationals arriving at the southern border? China is not south of the United States. How'd they get there? And again, Clayton can take a victory lap on this because he's been warning about Chinese people crossing the border for months. Why?
60 Minutes finally did a whole deep dive on it. So I was a conspiracy theorist. What has Redacted ever said that's come true? How about most of it?
Yeah,
here, well, once again.
Yeah, maybe you want to screen people before they come across borders. Maybe you want to just do basic screening, you know, that kind of thing. Now, in other news about ICE and migrants, this is outrageous. Tennessee Attorney General Jonathan Skirmetti had to sue ICE to get them to not release thousands of what he says single adult immigration detainees into Tennessee, many of whom had criminal convictions. In this lawsuit, he forced ICE to give over 300 pages of emails that showed that ICE and charity groups are coordinating and planning to release non-citizens, just like sprinkling salt around these communities. Here are just a few of these documents. This one is from ICE officers planning to release migrants into Nashville. Did the residents of Nashville say this was cool? No, they're just doing it. This is ICE to ICE. This is field office to home office. Here's another one. Take a look at this from the mayor's office in Nashville, asking ICE how many people to expect. Notice they don't give a limit here. They're just, this is from the mayor's office saying, okay, well, we're going to get these asylum seekers. How many do you think? Don't you think that maybe a city would give a limit? No, it's unlimited. What should we do? Where are we going to put them? Here's another one from a charity organization, says that this location has agreed to take busloads of 50 at a time for at least 3 weeks because a majority of those present at a meeting decided that. So, question, why are charities deciding for the people who live in those communities? Shouldn't the residents get a say? No, it's ICE working with either local officials and charities. The people don't get any say at all. The only say that they got was through their attorney general, who said, no, sir. In fact, the lawsuit made ICE abandon this plan, but this doesn't mean that those people went away. These people existed in detention centers in Louisiana. They just didn't get to come to Tennessee. So Louisiana still has them, presumably being exposed to tuberculosis now. So where are they? What happened to them? Here's what the AG says about this. Not only was this a coordination between ICE, Nashville city officials, and a Tennessee immigration nonprofit, again, why do they have that power, that they were going to release thousands of single adult non-citizen detainees, and that many of them had violent criminal records, including murder, rape, and kidnapping. So maybe ICE should not be working with nonprofits. Maybe you don't want these nonprofits having a say in what happens in your city. Maybe someone wants to stop that. Now, also this week, NBC reported that the Department of Homeland Security has identified more than 600 migrants in the U.S. who may have connections to a notorious Venezuelan gang called Tren de Aragua. They say that some of them could be victims, witnesses, or family members, but they know that at least 600 of them are connected and are on this watch list, and Great. That this gang is in at least 15 states, possibly 8 more than that. okay, you're watching them, but let's recall what ICE told us recently they do when they know of non-citizen criminals. They don't do anything. They know about them, and that's about it. Remember this document where ICE admitted that even though they know about illegal immigrant criminals, they mostly have to let them go. They gave us this chart, which we showed you in many iterations. It showed that of over 600,000 criminals, including murderers, kidnappers, and rapists, 97% of them are not detained. So that's nice that they're watching an extra 600, but we know that they have a 2% chance of being detained. So watch them all you want. Does that make us safer?
Terry Newsom up there in Chicago, friend of the show, Terry Newsom, who hosts the, is it the Behind Enemy Lines or Behind the Lines podcast? Or mm-hmm. what is it on the, I forget the name of the show. Anyway, Terry sent this to me just the other day, and he said, the new Chicago PD FOIA requests show hundreds of Tren de Aragua crimes throughout Chicago. Only through FOIA requests are they getting this information out to the public. So all of these illegal, violent Venezuelan gangs, first-degree murders, are in three first-degree murders in these FOIA requests in Chicago.
Yeah.
Thanks, Terry, for sending that over.
So, yeah, again, it seems like, you know, attorney generals, they're elected officials. They're on the ballot. So they're going to do things that they think will help them to continue to be elected. So it absolutely matters if your attorney general sees things like this, like, hey, maybe it's not so great to release criminals or people with infectious diseases that we have no cure for into our communities. So who you elect in this matter absolutely matters.
Greg Voles in our chat here says, I had a friend who drove illegals in an through for an irrigation company or with an irrigation company and got tuberculosis. There you go. Thanks, okay. Greg, for sharing that. All right, we've got more news to get to here in a moment.
We're going
to
tell you about this new documentary called Their Lives Matter about young children, specifically minority children, who are harmed by gang violence. 10 per month are dying, but you know the names of George Floyd and the likes of that. And so marching on behalf of those people, yelling for decriminalization and defunding the police, who does that hurt? Minorities more than any other group. So we're going to look at this documentary in a second, and I'm excited to talk to the host of that documentary. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Hallow, because it is the number one app in the world for Christian prayer and meditation. And I tell you, guys, if you are not praying or communicating with your higher power in any way right now, I don't know how you're getting through, because the world is terrifying. The election is scaring me. Global warfare is terrifying. We need help. We can't solve this all by ourselves. So appeal to a higher power, however it is that it means to you, because Hallow as a brand does not align with any particular political party. But of course, as a Christian brand, they share a lot of conservative values. And this is something that we can think about as we, you know, try and get through this together. Hallow has over 10,000 audio guided prayers plus meditations. If you want something maybe a little bit non-denominational, they have it. They have daily gospel reflections, daily miracle reflections, daily silent prayers, and daily spiritual writings. It's a great place for you to get in touch with your own spirituality. Also, it helps you lower anxiety, helps you battle whatever it is that you're dealing with, whether it's personal or more than that. So right now, you can go to Hallow.com/redacted, and you can download Hallow for a 3-month free trial. So tell them that we sent you. And again, whatever type of prayer, spirituality you need to get through, we are a proponent of that. So if you need a little help, try out Hallow. It's Hallow.com/redacted. Who are the victims of defunding and demoralizing the police? Well, children. Mostly Black children. Why do we not hear about these victims? Former Black Lives Matter activist Xavier DeRosso has a new short documentary out called Their Lives Matter on PragerU, and it's a heartbreaking piece of work of all the things we're not supposed to notice, such as the fact that Black people are the victims of Black crime mostly, while society works so hard to advocate for the rights of criminals. Why is that? Joining me to discuss is Xavier DeRosso. Thank you so much for joining me to talk about this.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
So why don't you give me a summary of your documentary, why you felt motivated to do this, and what is the main message you want us to hear?
Of course. So essentially, the documentary is shedding light on what the media is not paying attention to. And it's the fact that we have so many young children who are just going to school or playing out in their grandmother's front yard or getting their hair cut. And they end up being the ultimate victims of this reckless violence that we have in so many of our inner cities. And no one's talking to these parents. Nobody's hearing from the families of these victims or really just shedding any light. And part of why I think that that's an issue is because we had movements like Black Lives Matter and Defund the Police and all these different narratives that were shifting our focus away from the problems that are actually truly happening right here in our own homes. And when we sat down with these people, we were learning their stories and learning that ultimately, a lot of this is coming from the progressive DAs, and I really wanted to help people pay more attention to what's happening locally in their communities, because these progressive DAs are putting policies in place such as reducing cash bail, eliminating the three strikes rule, and also just not prosecuting so many different violent crimes, and all of those ultimately put criminals back on the streets. And when you put criminals back on the streets, we can't sit here and pretend to be shocked anymore that they're committing more crimes, becoming repeat offenders, and the children are the ones suffering from it. So what I want right. people to take away from this is start paying attention and start realizing our district attorneys, that's pretty much as important as our elections for president. We need to start holding our own communities accountable and stop motivating people to, or demotivating the police, I should say, and motivating people to align with groups like Black Lives Matter when we're not even treating children's like their, or sorry, we're not even treating children like their lives matter.
Right. And you have a shocking statistic that 10 children per month are dying of street violence, mostly minority children, mm-hmm. but we don't see their names in the news. We see names like George Floyd, we see these other archetypes, but not this is innocence. This is real innocence lost, right?
Right. And, you know, that's why I keep saying we have made household names of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Trayvon Martin, but we haven't made household names of the likes of Michael Moultrie Jr. We haven't made household names of Natalie Wallace. These children who were doing absolutely nothing wrong and having their lives taken from them. And how the entire documentary came about initially started, I was going to make a video about this young teenager who was at a bus stop and two thugs ran up and shot and killed him. And as I was doing research about this young child, I started getting confused because the information wasn't aligning. And then it dawned on me that, wow, I'm confusing two different stories of two different children who were both killed at bus stops in the same week. And it made me realize, oh my goodness, how often is this happening? And why is it that I'm not even hearing about this in mainstream media? Why am I having to scavenge and turn over every single rock and look in every corner of the internet trying to find this information? The outrage that you would expect there to be about children being senselessly murdered, it's not there. And when it is there, it's not sustained. Not in the way like we see with BLM when the likes of George Floyd passed away. We're still hearing George Floyd's name to this day, but you don't hear about these truly innocent victims, and that needs to change.
Now, you speak to parents of these young children who were gunned down by gang violence. And one of the things that you speak about is that when this woman, she says, I want to talk to this person that shot my 4-year-old son. I want to tell them, did you mean to do this? What do you feel about this? Will there be justice? And the response that she gets from gang members is collateral damage. And so what do we as a society do about a group of people who think that it's acceptable to have collateral damage of children when their aim is to kill one another? How does this happen to a group of people?
You know, it's sociopathic, because I don't know how you can sleep at night knowing that you took someone's life in general, but that you took a child's life, a child that was doing absolutely nothing wrong. I don't know how you sleep at night. But what it really boils down to, it's a cultural issue. You don't become a sociopath like that overnight. It starts in the home. It starts with having a broken home, a broken environment, a lack of accountability, and just a lack of ambition. There are so many issues that just all cultivate into what we're seeing in these gang members. And it's really a societal issue that we need to come together and stop normalizing. And this is a blunt way to say it, but in a lot of these very urban neighborhoods, they uplift and celebrate a lot of loser behavior. It's very much a loser behavior to be out here committing these crimes, being gang members, being just nefarious criminals. It's not cool. It's not something that should be celebrated. It's not something that should be celebrated in our music, in our art, in our TV shows, in our movies. But for far too long, they have glorified absolute loser behavior. And we need to stop that. We need to start having parents, both parents back in the home. We need the nurturing and we need the discipline. We need the focus and the priorities and just parents who are teaching their kids that you can go out and be better and do better. Because a lot of these people who are committing these crimes, they tend to be young. They tend to be very young, often black men who come from extremely broken homes with no accountability and no guidance. And what they do is they go and they destroy the exact same communities that they live in or that they grew up in. And then they have no remorse. It needs to change. It is cultural rot.
Right. So these DAs that are saying, well, these people had bad lives. We don't want to see them punished, overly punished for what they've done. But then somebody is saying, well, actually, they have no remorse for killing a child. What do we do with a person like that who shrugs their shoulders and says collateral damage? I mean, I guess the extreme, the mama bear in me wants that person to never see daylight again. That's what I want. So even you talk about how black people don't want less policing. They want safer streets. So with that, what do we do with that? I guess is what I'm asking. I mean, I know it's a big question, right?
I mean, yeah, I remember even back in 2020 at the height of Floydapalooza, I remember seeing a poll, I believe it was from Gallup, showing that 80% of black people wanted the police in their communities the same amount, if not more. So when you hear this rhetoric about over-policing and we need to get the police out of the urban areas, no one is saying that. These people do want police in their communities. They do want more of these DAs to hold these criminals accountable. But when you have these DAs who are like, oh, we don't want to make these people's lives harder, it's like, no, what you're doing is you're incentivizing the criminals to continue. Because if you're not holding them accountable, if you are not making prison time a serious threat and something that can actually be delivered upon, then what is going to stop these people from committing crimes? If you have nothing to deter them from going out and shooting and killing and robbing each other, then they're just going to keep doing it. We need to start having punishments again. And it's sad to say, but a lot of these people just need to be put in prison and they need to stay there. If so, especially if they're a repeat offender, getting rid of the three strikes rule, which essentially just means if you keep committing crimes, we're going to give you harsher and harsher sentences until you don't see the light of day. That to me makes sense, because if you refuse to rehabilitate and become a member of society with any kind of couth or any kind of remorse for your fellow man, or at least for children, then you do not deserve to see the light of day. You do not deserve to be walking on the same sidewalks as the people who are out just trying to live a safe and peaceful life. So we need to start having DAs that are not progressive, because even the premise of a progressive DA does not make sense. Why would you be a progressive DA? If anything, you should be trying to conserve the law, the Constitution, and keeping your communities safe. But right now, these DAs are wildly out of control, and it's time for them to be checked.
Well, I was reading recently that in 2014, the Obama administration sent a notice that schools that overpunished minority children would be at risk for losing funding. So what did we teach these minority children? That you can get away with brutalizing your communities. Mm-hmm. And that now bleeds into, because those children that were in school during the Obama years are adults and they have been taught. And when you watch this documentary and you see this woman and you say, is there any justice for your son? You and I know before she opens her mouth that there's not, because he's a nameless black child, victim that we don't get to see. So it makes sense to me that this would continue. And so what do you want people to do after watching this documentary? And I want to say that, look, most of us who were moved by the death of George Floyd, we had 9 minutes to be silent over his death, right? Do you have twice that amount for children? To put your effort into children. That's why I think that it's worth your 20 minutes to watch this documentary. So tell us what you think the rest of us should do after being moved by this.
I think, of course, you need to be paying more attention to what's happening in your community, especially if you're a parent. If you are a parent, then you need to be paying attention to who is your DA. What's the crime like in your community? What groups are there that you can potentially support locally? And just helping people become aware of how serious this issue is. I know the election is important. We're all paying attention to the presidential election, but you also need to pay attention to your local legislation and what is happening in your community so that you aren't being devastated by this as well. Because I remember when I was in Chicago, off the record, I was talking to some of the detectives who were helping us do some of the shooting and keeping us safe. They were shooting for the film and keeping us safe.
Right.
They were telling me,
not gun shooting.
Yeah, I was like, let me keep that clear. Yeah. but they were telling me that it has gotten so bad there that the true numbers is that you have essentially a 90% chance of getting away with murder in Chicago. Because even if they do arrest you, you're probably going to have minimal jail time. And someone like Happy Greg, the mother whose 4-year-old child was shot recklessly, she told me that they have so much evidence. They know essentially who shot her child. They have it on video. They have eyewitnesses. They understand the motive. They know who they were actually trying to shoot. They have all of this information, but still the DAs will not prosecute them. And what made it even crazier to me is that the person who shot her son, that she is 99% sure shot her son, went and attempted murder in the next county over the same week, same gun, same bullet shells, same clip of bullets. And still, that man has not been brought to justice. So we need to be holding these leaders accountable, and we need to do everything that we can to keep our communities safe. And that starts with awareness. So that's why I'm so happy that people are checking out Their Lives Mattered.
Well, you can find it at PragerU.com. You can also follow Xavier on many different platforms of social media where he tells us more about that. Thank you so much for coming on Redacted and telling us about this.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's awful. And you can't watch that and not be haunted for those parents. There's a man who says, you know, he came home from work. He was tired and his daughter wanted to watch Frozen. And he's like, no, baby, we have lots of time. We'll watch it another time. And he said, we didn't get that time to watch together because then she's gunned down in a playground, just playing outside. So we have to see these kids. We have to be outraged about them more so, right, than adults. This is a loss of innocence. And so watch it and let us know what you think. Also separately, after the first time Xavier DeRosa was on Redacted, he said he had overwhelmingly positive response. So thank you for reaching out to him. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so a little point, we're going to take your super chats here in a second, get any super chats in before we wrap up the show today. We'll take your
and Rumble rants
as well.
Yep.
And Rumble rants. But I just want to point a programming note for all of our Redacted Plus members. We have a Redacted Plus community, which you can join. You know, the show is totally free, but if you want to support us, you can, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can join our Redacted Plus community. And we have exclusive interviews and content for you. And tonight we're releasing a special interview with the son of Oliver Stone, that is Sean Stone, whose new documentary, All the President's Men, How the Deep State Has Went Systematically to Take Down President Trump. And this new documentary hits on Friday, but you can watch the full interview that I did with Sean Stone, again, the son of Oliver Stone. He's the director behind this new project, All the President's Men. It's for Redacted Plus members only, so that will drop tonight. If you are a Redacted Plus member, again, just go to redacted.inc and you can sign up. And you pick the price, right, David? It's like you can do it for as little as you want or as much as you want. It's totally up to you how you join in the conversation. So redacted.inc. All right, let's get to your super chats now and let's put some up here on the screen. Right. Thanks for all of your feedback.
I'll do the two Rumble rants because we can't put those on the screen. So we've got Tolson 718 says, watch out, with this much Trump momentum, the deep state could easily instigate a civil war after they hacked the electronic voting machines in swing states to give Harris the presidency.
I know RFK is worried about a deep state civil war. He mentioned that last night. Thank you for that.
Me too.
And then we got G Fontes 119. The White House and State Department said that every missile fired at Israel was destroyed. They left out that many were destroyed when they hit the target.
Right, exactly. Yes. We covered that on the show. That was more fake news and propaganda by the mainstream media. The amount of missiles that just absolutely overwhelmed, many of them hypersonic missiles that destroyed many, many military targets. And of course, you won't see it on national television. They were basically hiding the damage so that you won't see it. They'll pretend that the Iron Dome was like, you know, saved everything.
Yeah.
M
says, thank you for the work you guys put in. Redacted is critical.
Oh, it's gone. Disappeared.
Sorry.
Can you pop that back?
Oh, sorry.
Critical
I got to come on the production machine.
In this time of uncertainty, 100% asset to the information war. Thank you. Well, thank you for saying that. We really appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next one. Thank you, M, for that one. Appreciate it.
I'm coming. Sorry. I had to. I put a timer on it during the show.
Another one from M. Check out UNZ review, UNZ review, and look at the recommendations on controversial books. UNZ review. Okay, I'll check that out. Thank you, M. Appreciate
that. It's your turn to take one of his book group. Yeah. Those are heavy. They're heavy.
I've got a good one I'm about to read right now, and I'm deeply troubled by it, so I'm about to read that. I like to space out my books. So I like do a novel, like read like a science fiction book, and then go back to effed up crap.
Yeah, right. I'm only on effed up crap. Okay, KEG says, thank you for the $2 super chat. Alternative media is rebranded mainstream media. Excuse me, sir?
No, I think he's being positive about that.
Oh, right? Okay. Alternative media is rebranded mainstream.
Like
maybe
like this show is now becoming mainstream that like people are turning off CNN.
Okay.
And
I hope you don't think that this is pig on a lipstick, that we are anything like
lipstick
mainstream.
On a pig.
Yeah, pig on a lipstick.
Pig on a lipstick.
That we are anything like mainstream
pig on
media.
A pig
could stand on a lipstick. I'm going to draw it for you.
Okay.
All right. Next one. But thank you if that's a compliment, and if not, see me after class.
And that's, that's a new one.
Okay. Okay.
Oh.
All the talking heads lead us into docility, bad people.
Docility.
That's okay. A hard word to say. Docility. I like that.
Yeah.
And the last people who watch mainstream media are alternative media heads showing it to everyone else. Body cams on politicians and autonomous jury.
No. Oh. Okay. I get what you're saying there.
I would go for body cams on politicians. That would be like, make them wear them 24/7 so we can see everything they vote on.
Ugh, be like a Diddy party. I don't want to see that. All right, let's keep a roll here. John DeLeo, thank you so much. Research flat earth. Flat earth. I know people want me to do a flat earth segment. I've been planning on doing one, but maybe after the election we'll look into that. Look, I'm as open as they come to anything. Mm-hmm. So if you can prove to me that that's the case, I'm wide open to it. Show me the evidence. Show me the evidence. Hmm. Yeah.
So but we're a little busy. John. The world's at war. We're not saying that that's not important, but the war is important in the election. And so, you know, you can only bite off so many things at once, research projects. Okay. Thank you, €50 from 1984 in Sarajevo. The soldiers from KP have gone to RU, not because Putin has run out of soldiers, but because Putin has only sent warships to Iran. Putin has publicly stated that the USA bears the main blame for the war.
In Ukraine.
In Ukraine, and will pay. The soldiers would have gone to... because Putin has not...
All right.
I'm not sure.
Soldiers from, have gone to Russia. I think you're talking about from the Korean Peninsula have gone to Russia, not because Putin has run out of soldiers, but because Putin has not only sent warships to Iran. Putin has publicly stated that the USA bears the main blame for the war in Ukraine. Yeah. Okay. So thank you for that. Yeah, we're on a tinderbox right now. Frieden in Europe, in Europa, MK, thank you for that.
Thank you so much. $2 from Saline Prepper Dark Secrets. Forget the wall. Build a canal or a moat.
Yeah, that's what we need right now.
Yeah, with alligators. All right, $2 from Rod. Ukraine will reach Siberia. Watch. Okay.
We'll reach Siberia.
As in they will push into Russia or they will use long-range weapons to get into Siberia?
Maybe long-range weapons, but I definitely 100%... believe that war is coming north of the border up into Scandinavia. This has been foretold. We've been covering it here on the show. This will happen. There will be a war up into Scandinavia. So Finland, you guys better get ready for that. Melanie, please research the hundreds of prophets of Christ who daily want and foretell. This is an effort to save every soul. Please, much love. Thank you from the Terrible Truth, 777. Appreciate that.
Again, from $2 from Rod, maps are flat. There's your clue.
Maps are flat. There's a, okay. What if I wrap it around a sphere? If I wrap a map around a sphere, yeah. See how that works.
And that's the last. That's the last one, and a good place to stop, I'd say.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Well, thank you guys for an amazing week. You know, we're live Monday through Thursday here. We've got a lot of content for you this weekend. Again, once again, please sign up for our Redacted Plus community. That interview with Sean Stone will be released to Redacted Plus members tonight exclusively about the deep state's efforts to take down Donald Trump. You don't want to miss that interview. He said some mind-blowing things in there. So please check that out. Have a great week, weekend, everyone, and we'll see you back here first thing on Monday. Have a great night, everyone.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.